G'day expats and welcome to Expat Chat episode 15. My name is Brett Evans and I'm the Managing Director for Atlas Wealth Management in the Europe, Middle East and Africa region based here in Dubai. And joined with me today is my colleague James Ridley, who's the Managing Director for the APAC region based out of Australia. G'day James.
G'day Brett, how are you going there today?
Well thanks mate, It's another week, another episode, and since we last spoke, you know, some massive, I guess impediments have been sort of thrown up. At the moment, I'm now in the process of trying to teach myself how to cut my hair. So if you go back and, and look at all the episodes, you can see my hair is starting to get a bit long. So
a bit woofy, yep.
Yeah, so thank God Amazon is still delivering. So I'm going to have to probably invest in some clippers and some scissors. So I'm not sure.
It's a dangerous game.
Exactly. And when you've got a good head for radio like I do, it's not going to be pretty.
No, well, I mean, obviously, me being in Australia on the Gold Coast, we can still use some facilities. So I've actually reached out to some sort of a barber because mine's getting a bit ratty, to be honest. There's only so much product that can keep this thing down.
You're developing a bit of a fro.
Oh, I looked at this morning and go, why do I bother? Yeah. So, at least I can still venture out or people can come to, you know, your house and obviously cut your hair still. So I'm quite lucky, but I'm going to be, can't wait to see what you come up with. People tune in, everyone needs to tune into the YouTube version of Expat Chat 15, I think, or Expat Chat 16, I should say, next episode.
Yeah, exactly. And my wife has pretty much said, because she's stuck back in Australia, she said, if it's too bad, she'll probably delay coming back to Middle East for later. But what makes they say, sense, you know, the difference between a good and bad haircut is a week. So, we'll see how we go anyway.
I don't know. I'm not sure in this case.
Yeah, that's right. I don't back myself, unfortunately.
That's right. I think focusing a bit on today, I mean, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about an important topic, which we're seeing is actually impacting expats pretty much everywhere, actually, especially Asia, Middle East, and that's about these insurance / investment bonds.
Yep.
Obviously accessing funds there. Another item, probably just a general market update. I mean, it's been only a few days, and we also had that long Easter weekend here in Australia, so markets were closed obviously Friday and Monday, so not too much has happened. It's sort of just gone up, down, or down, up, I should say. I suppose another item that we'll close out on is just talking about some relief that we're seeing, especially in the state of Queensland, about land tax and those sort of things. And that'll probably do it today. So a bit more of a shorter episode, but we'll get to it and let's kickstart it. So obviously, the ASX, not too much has happened recently.
Before we go there, we've got to do the disclaimer. We've got to do that fun and games, the jingle.
Sorry, Brett.
You are. Love the enthusiasm. All information that people watch and listen to on this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as personal financial advice.
That's right, Brett. Absolutely. So I suppose one thing that we saw came out actually in the last 24 hours, I'm not sure if you saw that, Donald Trump blaming who now? Obviously playing the blame game, which he's pretty good at, obviously.
Pulling funding, I saw that.
I know. I wonder how much the US actually donates to who. I can only imagine it'd be a stupid amount, hundreds of millions of dollars of some sort, surely.
Look, I think it's a great example of, certainly who have got a few questions to answer for with respect to their monitoring of China. Early on in the piece, and whether they were complicit or whether they were kept in the dark by the Chinese authorities, but you know, pulling their funding doesn't exactly achieve a good result, because you know, now more than ever, you know, whether you like it or not, whose assets and resources are greatly required in this environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, you know, the market really hasn't done too much since last week. I think yesterday the market, obviously ASX opened up about 1%, and then as we're doing it now, it's closed by about 0.8%. So it's just hasn't done too much. I think it's still trying to work out where to position itself, whether we've found the bottom, whether we've seen the bottom, and whether, you know, we're switching back into a bit of a bull market. But I just think at the moment we're still in a bit of a volatile bear, probably will be for the next few months at least.
Look, I think to me, and both officers are getting a lot of questions regarding investment opportunities. Is there now the right time to invest? Like I said in our webinar, you never know when you pass the bottom until after you pass the bottom. So, not that anyone's flying blind, but essentially for for people who are looking to invest in the market, you need to take on board what the facts are right now, how the market's interpreting those facts, and what the next 12 and 24 months looks like, because obviously the markets are forward-looking beasts. They don't look retrospectively, and they don't look at the now. They're always factoring in earnings growth or declines or, you know, all those sort of macroeconomic issues. In saying that, you know, certainly where we are right now, the market has recovered a little from its recent lows. And if you're taking a sort of a five-year view, and I came to you, James, and said, look, you know, you've got some money to put in the market, and we had that discussion in February. And then in February, I said, I can give you a 15, 20% discount on prices. Would you have taken it?
Absolutely.
Exactly. So, yeah, and that's on the predication that you were taking that 5 to 10 year view. You know, certainly any shorter than that, you know, will have more of a bearing. But if you're taking a long-term view, and as long as you're quarantining your investments into companies and sectors that aren't going to be the whipping boy of COVID-19, like hospitality, hotels, recreation, travel, tourism, those sort of things, you know, the companies that and the sectors that aren't grossly affected by this will bounce back quickly from this, in 12 months' time, you know, we'll look back and look at this like a bad dream. For the travel and tourism sector, it is a lot like SARS, where it took 2 to 3 years for, you know, Asia to recover, or September 11, same thing. People just did not travel after September 11 for a couple of years, and it took a while for that to pick up again. So to me, it really boils down to you just don't take a shotgun approach. There are some sectors and companies that will be more affected than others. You know, that great Australian passion for betting. I've had people sort of saying, should I just put all my money in Qantas because the government's not going to let Qantas go bust? I can buy it at a cheap price. That is no different to putting everything on red or black at the casino. You know, look, do I think Qantas is going to bust? No, I don't. Do I think there'll be support? No. Yes, I do. But I'm not going to bet my life savings on one company. So, you know, and I think that's probably the biggest thing that we talk about with clients is when it comes to investing, you know, whether you're a defensive, a balanced or a high growth investor, you're not always invested 100% in equities anyway.
Yeah. You know,
so when you're looking at investing, you know, it may only be 20, 40, 60, 80% of your portfolio is equities. The rest is fixed interest and a diversified asset base. And that's how you do ride out these sort of turbulent times, by having diversification. But, you know, I think investors and potential investors are always love to be able to call the bottom. And, you know, the only time you get that is if you're lucky. You know, if people could call that, you would have had trillionaires from the GFC, because they ran exactly the time to buy. If you're in at that time, you happen to buy at that time, guess what? You know, pat yourself on the back, you got some luck. Best strategy in these sort of markets is actually a dollar cost averaging strategy. So you look at, you build your framework of what you want to invest in. You look at the prices and say, rightio, okay, let's put in 10% now to get a toe in the water. And then watch it for the next week. You know, if we see things stabilizing, put another 10% in. If it see things deteriorating, you pull back, wait for that deterioration to subside, and then put another 10% in. So what you're doing is getting different price points over time. But what you're doing is you're averaging out your entry costs, and it enables you to almost invest with the benefit of hindsight. You know, you're sort of investing in the past because you didn't know whether that was a good time or not. But I guarantee in 12 months' time, you know, your purchase on the 2nd of May looks brilliant. But at the time, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, dollar cost averaging, it obviously assists us with controlling that timing risk. It's probably one of the only controllables we have when we're actually entering the market. We can do it in tranches, stage it out. And then obviously in 18 months' time, you know, you can look back in hindsight and go, okay, that was a good decision. Okay, you know, it did drop back then, but then I bought another 10 to 20% then, so that's okay. That's improved that weighted average cost of that portfolio, so that's good. And again, it's one of those only things that we can control, especially through volatile markets. And I think, you know, a reflection of sort of the volatility at the moment, I think yesterday Westpac announced its earnings cut has been cut by about 1.6 or 1.8 billion, something ridiculous, yet the share price actually closed up. So usually that doesn't happen. Usually when you take a hit like that, the share price will drop a little bit. So what's happening on the market doesn't seem to bear much relationship to what is happening to most businesses in real time. So it just means, you know, we might see another pullback soon. Don't know how big it will be, but, you know, again, it's just a case that we're still in that volatility period over the next few months.
Yep, I completely agree. Completely agree.
Yeah, now moving further out of the market update and moving into these investment bonds, into insurance bonds as well, or assurance bonds, and they're called many names, tax wrappers. I'm probably missing a few there. You could probably rattle off a few more, Brett, if you thought about it.
Oh, they love their acronyms. And they love calling these things anything but what they actually are. So, you know, insurance-linked investment schemes, executive bonds, that's my favourite one, you know. It's like join the club. At the end of the day, they're all cancerous and, you know, crap anyway.
Yeah, that's right. And I think one of the biggest issues that we're seeing right now, I suppose on a global scale, is a lot of people are unfortunately becoming unemployed, trying to draw down on capital. And, you know, as we know, you know, what's one of the biggest things or biggest issues with these type of investment bonds, Brett?
Well, I think, you know, we've been very vocal for the last 10 years about our dislike for these products. They haven't been sold in Australia, UK, US since the 90s, and that's for a very good reason. And the reasons why we don't like these bonds are three main criteria. The first of all is your interests aren't aligned with the person, and I won't call them an advisor because they never really are. Your interests aren't aligned with the person who's getting you to sign the forms, because that person gets a nice big fat upfront commission that could be anywhere between sort of $10,000 and $20,000 to get you to commit to this product. So they don't have any accountability on that front. The second of all is the massive ongoing costs. I was running some numbers at the moment for a client or new client coming on board who has one of these absolute crap products. And so far I've worked out she's paying about 7.5% per annum in fees. Jesus. And then you've got, so that's not bad enough. Then on the, on the third scale, you've got that commitment you have to make to honour your contributions that you've agreed to for a period of 10 years. And you hit the nail on the head. People's jobs, their income streams, all bets are off at the moment. And people are coming to me saying, so-and-so in Dubai convinced me to buy this 2 years ago or 3 years ago or 5 years ago. And while the going was good, I didn't really worry about it. But now I can't afford the $2,000 a month that I committed to this. What's going to happen? And essentially, you know, people are stuck in this position where if they don't commit with it, they pay penalties. And if they try and pull their money out, they pay penalties. And virtually the reason why those penalties are there are to recover the fees, the upfront fees that the platform provider, whether it's Friends Provident, Generali, Zurich, paid to the advisor when you signed up to that platform. So they need, you know, they virtually said to this advisor, you sign them up, we'll give you 10 years worth of fees in advance. And if they pull out at 5 years, well, then we need to claw that back. But we won't claw it back from the advisor. We're going to claw it back from the client. So, you know, at the moment, certainly in the Middle East right now with all borders closed, even if you have a residence visa and you're stuck outside the country, you can't come back in. So what we're seeing is just a ton of Australian expats who are stuck outside the country. Mm. Some of their employees are sympathetic and they've said, look, we'll put you on unpaid leave. Yeah, that doesn't help you if you're servicing a bond because you're still paying your rent. More than likely, if you're in another country and that country is not your home country, you might be paying for a hotel. So you're paying rent in Dubai, you're paying a hotel, Airbnb, whatever it is, and then
no income coming in.
No income coming in. And then on the other side is, you know, employees just going, you know what, we're just downsizing and you've lost your job. Once again, no income coming in. So, you know, we're always... Yeah, we like to beat our chest about the virtues of investing, but in concert with that, we always talk about the massive importance of liquidity and transparency. We have clients in 30 countries and, you know, massive range of ages and demographics and careers and positions. But one thing that's constant amongst all our clients that we know very well is change. Change is a constant, especially for expats. You can't commit to a bond now for 10 years, well, you don't know what's happening with your career in 2 years. you know, what's happening, you know, what country you're going to live in. You might be living in Dubai at the moment, but if you move to the US, these bonds are probably the worst thing you can ever hold from an IRS point of view. So, you know, that's where anything we talk about, and certainly we practice what we preach when it comes to investing clients' funds, we're always talking about the importance of being able to put your hand on your assets and pull them back if your circumstances change. And, and people say, oh, what sort of time frame? We can get our clients' money back to them in 7 working days. That's the norm. That is the 21st century living. You know, the products that are being sold are, you know, the best way I've been describing it to clients is it's like a 1950s Volkswagen Beetle with a brand new body on top. It is still an old product. And it is
They're illegal now.
Yeah.
In I wouldn't say obviously in the Middle East and throughout Asia, but obviously Australia, I think the UK, the FCA has clamped down on that now in terms of the upfront commissions.
Yeah, Hong Kong as well.
And I mean, the reason why a lot of expats get caught out here is obviously they're promoted as these tax-free vehicles. And then sometimes, you know, those salesmen are crafty enough to say, oh, well, you can't contribute back to your Australian super fund or anything like that because you're living overseas. So why don't we use this, which is tax-free? And sometimes they'll throw a bit of verbiage at you or some sort of information that might say ATO section, I can't remember the section, 23AH or something like that. So see, you know, it's still treated as a foreign investment fund, so it's still tax-free or something like that. Not the case at all. They sort of throw too much at you and then you end up believing them and then off we go. We're locked into a 10, 20, 25-year plan where in the event we're not doing those ongoing contributions anymore, sometimes that'll actually still eat into our balance. So if we're not contributing, what, $500, $1,000 per month, then they'll take that from the original capital that's already in there. So you're just seeing your balance essentially shrinking each month, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. You know, and I think it's important for people to understand, you know, the very loose legislation that these offshore salesmen are relying upon in order to sell this. So you have what's called the FIF rules, the foreign income fund rules, which virtually means that funds overseas can benefit from Australian tax rules and vice versa. And it's meant to encourage portability of investments and back and forth. The problem is there are bond companies in Australia and bonds are used in Australia for very different reasons. You know, for someone who's on a tax rate of top marginal tax rate, they may invest in a bond because the bond, the tax rate is capped at 30%. So therefore, you know, it's more efficient to do it that way. And essentially what happens in Australia is when you invest in one of these bonds, and education bonds are probably the most popular ones, is, you know, the company issuing that bond will pay tax on your behalf at a rate of 30% to the ATO for 10 years and then flip that around. That's how you get your tax free at the end of the day. Now, the Friends Provenance, the Generalis, the Zurichs of the world are, you know, trying to fly under this same radar, but I guarantee Generali, Friends Provenance, Zurich aren't paying 30% tax to the ATO.
No.
And we've seen with the Common Reporting Standard and all the data sharing going on, the government and the ATO are getting very good at clamping down on these loopholes. And I'm not saying that's going to change this afternoon or tomorrow or next week. What I'm saying is if you're committing for 10 years and the ATO changed this rule, which they very easily can do it, in 5 years' time, you're now holding a wood duck that, yeah, let's be honest, I've never seen one of these bonds even perform in a market.
Yeah.
People, when they get their money back, they're just relieved to get their money back if they do get the money back. But let's say, you know, you found the you know, rare exception which did do well and they changed the rules in 5 years' time, guess what? Bingo, tax.
I mean, and a lot of the time, even though I suppose a lot of these overseas advisors, they try and lean on these foreign investment fund rules, from what I've seen, especially with tax rulings, the growth of the account is still taxable when you return back to Australia. Original contributions, they make up, obviously, the tax-free corpus of that trust, I should call it. So it isn't tax-free. And I mean, when you think about this from a logical point of view, if they were tax-free, the ATO would have had to provide a specific ruling on every single one and type of these type of investment products around the world. So that's thousands. The ATO hasn't done that. So when they're saying that, no, it's tax-free, ATO will provide you relief, they won't. You'd have to seek a private ruling, which is probably going to cost you a few thousand dollars, and then at the end of the day, you're still probably likely to find out it's still taxable. So that's a big issue there. And it's the same for, I suppose, your foreign pensions and those sort of things, you know, when you're withdrawing them, depending on your tax situation, getting advice before doing so.
And I think the other thing too is it's, you know, what's underneath the hood when it comes to how a lot of these products are invested. And you know, this might provide a bit of insight to watchers and listeners. So that lovely gentleman who in the three-piece suit talks with a very clipped accent, you know, he may come across as a investment professional. 9 times out of 10, if you look at his LinkedIn profile, he was probably selling property in his previous job and selling used cars before that. But what these guys do is they are, so now they've got you commit to a 10-year bond, then they go and build a portfolio of assets. Now, with these portfolio of assets, this sales professional essentially gets paid a commission on the way in. So rather than sort of saying, you know what, let's buy an ETF on the S&P 500, let's do this, which means the costs are very low, that doesn't benefit the sales professional. And essentially what they do is they'll put you into credit notes, structured notes, things that even true investment professionals who have many years experience will find it difficult to read these documents. And they'll get paid upwards of sort of 10% commissions to put you into these things. So then what happens is your risk profile might say you're a balanced investor, but these notes are for high-risk investors only. So now suddenly your portfolio is laden with these very complex investment notes, which, you know, when I'm bored sometimes, you know, we go through and look at these, you know, bits and pieces of these documents. And for you to really make a lot of money with these structured notes, the what's the best way to describe it? The window is so very narrow because they have, you know, very complex option strategies around them, derivative strategies around them, so that if the market does this, you don't make any money, but you don't lose. If the market does this, you lose money. But to make money in a good way, it has to be in such a narrow window that, to me, it is like trying to throw a dart at a dartboard 10 years away. Like, there's no way you can hit it.
Well, most traditional investors, you know, they'll come across as balanced to growth usually, and they shouldn't have derivatives in their portfolio. They're too high risk. I mean, remember that research report I had to write, and which went into that class action. I still have nightmares about that from seeing the amount of commissions that guy on the backside was getting when he first started this executive redemption bond, and then the churning he was doing every 3 to 4 months. I couldn't believe it. I mean, that report was. Took me forever, but still, I think it still achieved a good result for the class action, but still, just can't believe how much they can get paid. You know, whenever they're putting you in, it can be anywhere between 1 to 5% in these structured notes, as they call them.
Wasn't one of the investments lost 25% in a quarter? Is that right?
Yeah. Well, that's one of them. There was a few others.
In a bull market, I'll just say that as well, just to put, you know, the framework around it. In a bull market, everyone should be making money.
Yeah, if the advisor had stuck them in, say, a simple balanced index Vanguard fund or something like that as an example, that Vanguard fund would have probably outperformed the account alone by more than 60%. It was something stupid, and you just couldn't believe it. And like I said, it still gives me nightmares that, you know, these people exist and they can, you know, do this to individuals and their clients. So,
So there's our public service announcement for today's episode. You know, when you get a and just as a something funny to hear, these people will call everyone. They've called me twice, you know, trying to sell me these sort of things. And you know, it's funny. I'll let them go for sort of 10 minutes. You know, let them prattle on just to see. You know, I'm curious what they say to try and convince people to part with their hard earned money. And after 10 minutes, I sort of pulled him up and said, you know what, you obviously don't know who I am and what I do. And they said, no, I don't. I said, well, look, on your computer in front of you, just type in Brett Evans Atlas Wealth Management. And he's like, I don't have a computer in front of me. So all these people really are is a call center.
They've got call sheets and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. They're just calling the next person, the next person, the next person. And you know, funny, you know, obviously we do a lot of work with the Dubai Financial Services Authority here in Dubai for our license. And that's the UAE equivalent of the Australian Securities Investment Commission back home in Australia. And one of the ladies we work with there, who's a regulator, got called. And 2 minutes into the conversation, she's like, do you know who I am? And he's like, no. And he's like, I work for the DFSA. Click.
Yep.
Now, if you had the conviction these products were good and you know, properly licensed, blah, 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 that person should not have hung up that phone. But that phone hang up is a clear example of just these people, they hide in the shadows. You know, their licensing is always very suspect. Their product allocation and risk analysis is woeful. And there's a reason why, when you go through and look at some of the markets that are cracking down on this, you know, Singapore really cracked down. A lot of these providers had to leave Singapore. Hong Kong's been cracking down for the last couple of years. Now there's like a 60% limit on upfront commissions. You know, I remember when that came through, there was a 54% reduction in the sales of these products in the first quarter. So that shows you very quickly, you know, just people are motivated by money, unfortunately. And, you know, when you look at all of these issues, it is like going to a car yard and here's all these brand new cars and there's this clapped out Volkswagen Beetle on the corner and someone trying to convince you to buy that instead of something brand new, because the brand new ones have Apple CarPlay, air conditioning, you know, all those things. They are new products that are, you know, cognizant of the world. You have full liquidity, full transparency, fees are low, blah, blah, blah. But no, they're trying to still sell the Volkswagen Beetles in the corner, you know, that are clapped out and old and they're too much to run.
Yeah, I think the industry is going to go the way of the dodo. I think it's slowly getting there in terms of that sort of the investment bonds and those sort of things. I'm sure they're having quite a hard time at the moment, which is good. So we'll wait and see what happens with that space, especially as the regulations get tighter and tighter.
Well, certainly with, you know, the lockdown here in the in Dubai, it's got to, you know, you'd think it would be killing them, because these people rely upon almost pressure tactics with a very slick retort list of, you know, how they respond to questions. And, you know, they rely upon being able to sit across from you and almost put a pencil in your hand. You'd have to say that they'd be finding it very difficult right now because they're locked in and they can't get out there and apply these pressure tactics to commit people to part with their hard-earned money.
Yeah, that's right. And I suppose in another sales industry, I'll admit my phone's been going off a fair bit now with real estate agents asking if I wanted to buy, if I wanted to sell.
Yeah.
So it's another tactic. Obviously, these people are motivated by money.
Yep.
And obviously, clearance rates have just dropped in regards to auctions, people actually selling, reserve prices, even rents, yields have dropped. People have been feeling the pinch. I spoke to a lady, lovely lady this morning, and she was saying that two of her properties that she rents out, she lives in the US, you know, they've lost their job. So she's sort of umming and ahhing, you know, what do I do? And I suppose that's a good segue into that topic we talked about last week about how Scott Morrison, he's announced obviously the relief for commercial property and he announced that something was coming for the residential property, you know, renting out a property and those sort of things. Nothing's come yet. It's a bit ridiculous, to be honest.
No, whether he's waiting for, obviously we've seen New South Wales and Queensland in the last couple of days announced their, I guess, relief packages, they call it. You know, obviously with Queensland, they're going to provide a relief on land tax. But the issue that I see is land tax doesn't apply to all investment properties. And, you know, and it's not a big amount. Like if, you know, if you look at the amount of land tax you'd pay if you did pay versus the amount of rent, you know, it's certainly not going to go any way to helping you if your properties are vacant.
No, that's right. And I mean, remember, land tax is calculated off the taxable value of the land, not the market value.
Yeah.
So it's really rare that someone has, I think the new threshold now is $599,000 of taxable land. So if someone's got a property that's worth that, the taxable value of land, you know, their property would probably be worth maybe $2-3 million. So I mean, it's not really going to hit home for too many people. You know, the average expat might own a rental property in between, say, $400,000 to $800,000, renting it out or whatever it might be. Obviously, that's in Queensland. Down in New South Wales, Victoria, would be a bit different if they're in those hubs. The other one they announced was that waiver, I think, for that 2% land tax and the foreign surcharge.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's a reduction. I think what the reduction was only for this year, obviously.
Yeah, 2019-2020 assessment year.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. And then the deferral of that, the 3-month deferral for land tax liabilities as well for the 2021 year. So not too much, to be honest. I would have thought they would have announced something regarding maybe council rates, because everyone pays council rates if they're a landowner. Still seen nothing on that side. Don't know whether we will. Don't know if we'll see anything, to be honest, on the residential side, other property owners or investment properties.
Yeah, we'll be putting out some blog articles on these things, you know, as small as it may be. You know, obviously, hopefully people find a bit of information there useful. But I'm not seeing enough yet that's going to save the property market.
No, not at all. I think we're still waiting for... And I'm wondering, I think I mentioned it last week as well, you know, whether Scott Morrison's sort of leaving it up to state governments to sort of sort out on themselves and say, okay, we'll take commercial because that affects big business.
Yep.
But, you know, when it comes to obviously residential side, we might leave that up to the state governments to make an opinion.
Yeah, look, it's a moving beast and every week, you know, changes and certainly from our point of view, we'll keep everyone posted on all these changes. But, you know, it has gone quiet in terms of all the packages and all the support coming out. So you've got to wonder whether the government's like, well, do we just hold back and not spend too much yet just to see what the effects are? You know, we can always do more later. But yes, expats can certainly be comforted that, you know, as soon as we see anything, you know, we'll be talking about it and we'll be discussing it. And another good segue, obviously, into the webinar we're going to be holding next week, Thursday. By the time this episode goes out, we'll have information on our website. If you just go to atlaswealth.com, go to our blog section and our webinar section, you'll see the details there. So last time we had expats in 52 countries, I think it was. So, you know, we're certainly...
That's right.
It's been great to have those global conversations and just help everyone out. So fingers crossed we can keep it up and keep everyone informed.
I mean, and it's not only going to be going out on the website, it'll be on all our socials, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter as well, I should say.
Yep.
So across all of them, so you'll see it coming out.
Exactly. So, right, mate, well, I'll leave it there. It's always good to have our chat on Expat Chats and stay safe and we'll talk to you next week.
You too, Brett. Thanks for your time. Speak to you soon. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, mate.